Regarding the giving of the Torah on Har Sinai, we see something that's very, very interesting. Amongst the many nisim, the many miracles that took place when Hashem gave the Torah, the Torah writes one thing in particular that even the very, very simple, pashut, basic meaning needs explanation. The Torah writes, "V'chol ha'am royin es ha'koylois," that by Har Sinai, all of the nation saw the sounds, saw the koylois. And we know that it's impossible to see sound, it's impossible to hear that which is shown. So the simple pshat in the pasuk, you know, says, "Darsheni, explain me, please." All the mafarshim on Chumash try to explain this lashon. Some give a mahalach, some give an approach, and they say, "Dibra Torah kaloshim b'nei adam," that the Torah is speaking, figuratively. Elsewhere in Tanakh, we see this as well, where it will use different figurative speeches in order, in language, in order to capture a certain feeling. And v'chol ha'am royin es ha'koylois, they got very moved. They it's like they saw these sounds. It was so moving. However, Rashi brings down the Medrash. And the Medrash learns differently. That when it says in the Pasuk, v'chol ha'am royin es ha'koylois, that the entire nation saw the sounds, Rashi brings down the lashon of the Medrash, royin es hanishma, v'shoymin es hanira, that there was a miracle, there was a supernatural experience that we as a people had by Har Sinai, that we were actually able to see the sounds, and we were actually able to hear that which was shown. The question is, why? Why was such an experience, why was such a miracle, such a supernatural ability, why was that necessary to have then? Why is that part and parcel of receiving the Torah? Svarim say that the Rishima of Har Sinai is felt every year as we receive again the Torah. So that means that on some level there's still this royin es hanishma, v'shoymin es hanira. What is that? Why do we need that? Why did the Rabbanu Shalom make that a part of our experience? So I want to try to understand and try to explain why, in terms of halacha, as well as in terms of machshava, in terms of a deeper understanding, why royin es hanishma, to be able to see that which is making noise, that which makes sounds, v'shoymin es hanira, and to be able to hear that which is shown, why that's part and parcel of receiving the Torah. In one of the Yartzeit Shiurim for his father, the Rav, Rav Yoshe Ber Soloveitchik Zatzal, he spoke about the concept of Messiah, the transmission of Torah. We all know that celebrating the Yom Tov of Shavuos is all about Moshe Kibol Torah Misinai U'Mesaron LeYeshua. So the Rav wanted to understand what this concept of giving over is, Messiah is. And as he often does, the Rav described in that shir how there's really two halakim, there are two dinim, there are two parts to understanding how the transmission of Torah took place and takes place. The first category, the Rav explains, is called the Messiah of Limud. Here, a Rebbe gives over to his Talmud how to actually and accurately analyze and understand, using Svara, using Yud Gimel Midas, how to learn up a Gemara, starting from a Pasuk, from a Mishnah. You build a Havana, you build an understanding of what is being said, of what is being given over, like the learning that we did for years and years in Yeshiva. And in that pursuit of truth, using logic, you bring rayas, and you are in the pursuit of the emes, of what is being given over in that pasuk or in that mishnah or in that teaching, and we argue one with the other in order to bring rayas in terms of reaching that truth. Chazal say that here yiftach bederei kishmul bederei. The Rambam has a lashon that you can have a bezdin that's even smaller, b'chachm of a minyan, but if it reaches a different maskana, a different conclusion in the Messiah of Limud, then they have the right to argue with their svara, with their rayas, even on a bezdin that that came earlier in time, even if it was greater in chachm or minyan. We can describe this method of learning as royin es hanishma, to look closely at the words and at the concepts that are being given over, to accurately understand them and to make the proper diukim. Chazal say, you know, this type of limit, oisies machkimais. It's the words that make us wiser, looking closely at them, and to be royin es hanishma, the words, so to speak, that we heard, to be able to closely analyze them to make the proper diukim. But the Rav says, this way alone, the Messiah of Limud, is insufficient. It's not enough to give over Yiddishkeit, to give over Torah, just with the Messiah of Limud. Can you imagine, you know, you go to a doctor and you need a surgery, and you find out that this guy is brilliant. He read and has memorized and understands every textbook in the field of, you know, the heart and all the valves and the arteries that and chambers of the heart. And the only problem is he's never witnessed, he's never interned, or he's never been trained to actually perform the surgery, but he's read all the books on it. There's something very, very much missing, and you would probably have no confidence in hiring such a doctor, because it's impossible to write, to speak, to describe everything. There's something about witnessing, about being part, about watching, about participating, that is necessary, that is a necessary part of being able to actually learn something and be able to become an expert. You know, imagine, you know, you try to write down for someone how to tie shoes, right? It would take you a very, very long time, and even if you wrote it in the clearest possible manner, it's very, very likely that the person reading what you wrote would be very, very confused and overwhelmed and still not be able to actually tie the shoes how you want him to. But if he simply watched as you tied your shoe, and you looked over him and he tied his, and you helped him and you corrected him, it would be much simpler. And therefore the Rav says that in addition to the Messiah of Limud, there's something called the Messiah of Maisa that one generation gives over to the other. Here we look at the actions, at the Hanhaga of Klal Yisrael, of how they fulfilled certain mitzvahs. And from looking at Klal Yisrael and their hanhagas, we see what the mitzvah is supposed to look like. For example, the Torah says pre Eitz Hadar. So how are we supposed to know what that is? So here we look at the Messiah of Maisa, of the actions of Klal Yisrael from one generation to the next. What fruit, what did they use that fulfilled this pre-Eitz Hadar? And from there we know the Pshat and the Pasuk. Ah, that's what the Torah meant by pre-Eitz Hadar. When the Torah says, the Chazal say that we need a snapir and kaskeses to be kosher, how are we supposed to know the semantics of what the definition of that word is? You can write it all you want, but I can still have sveikus what it is. Ah, but if I have a Messiah of Hanhagas Klal Yisrael, that's what it is, then that's how I know, and that's how I have a clarity beyond just the Messiah of Limud, through the Messiah of Maisa, that's what the Torah meant by that pasuk. And here the Rav says it's not based on svara, on logic, on intellect, on reasoning. These, we can call them almost divrei Kabbalah, halacha l'mayshim Sinai. Here, there's no rationale for why this is the case. It's a Hagodas Eidus. It's almost like a declaration of a testimony where one generation is telling the next generation, this is what the Rabbanu Shalom meant when the Torah was given on Har Sinai, because we received it from the previous generation and from the previous one who stood there at Har Sinai and witnessed this and understood this, that that's what it was meant to give over when it said the words Pri Eitz Hadar. The Mesorah of Maisa, this other category, is very different in nature than the Mesorah of Limud. Here, there's no arguing on it. You can't say that, I think mitzad my rayas or svaras that Pri Eitz Hadar means something else. Or that matzah isn't made from chita, it's made from something else. Here, if Klal Yisrael, the Hanhaga was something that was practiced by the majority of Klal Yisrael, by all of Klal Yisrael, given over from one generation to the next, here there's no Indian of Yiftach B'dar Kishmol B'dar, there's no rationale, there's no svaras, there's no rayas. Here, there's no machlaikas. So even when you see a machlaikas, for example, on a halachal Moshe Mishinai, it's never that one of the Tanoim is going to argue on it. At most, what you'll see is that in Gemara, is that I didn't have that Kabbalah, I didn't have that halachal Moshe Mishinai. But you don't argue directly on it. And if everyone has this Hanhaga, then there is no machlekes on it by any individual that would come with some sort of svara. And the Mesorah of Maisa, this one we can describe, this category, not as royin es ha-nishma. Here it's shoymin es ha-nira. Here it's the ability to be able to hear, to listen, and to interpret es ha-nira, the actions, the hanhagas of Klal Yisrael. And from there, to be shemea, to listen and to hear and to understand what Chazal, or what the Torah meant when it wrote the mitzvah or the halacha. It's being able to hear and listen to that which we see. Now the Rav, in the middle of this Yartzeit shir, when he was describing the Mesorah of Maisa, he then began to explain in a much deeper level what the Mesorah of Maisa is from a Mishnah in Yadayim, Mishnah Dalet, Perek Dalet, Mishnah Gimel. See, until now, we were understanding the Mesorah of Maisa of the Hanhaga, of when Klal Yisrael is doing something. By understanding that as we watch and as we look and as we learn from a previous generation doing something, it's a Haggadah Seidus. It tells us what the Torah meant, going back all the way to Har Sinai. It's a Haggadah Seidus. However, the Mishnah in Yadayim, Perek Dalet Mishnah Gimel, says a halacha over there, and the Rav says, based on this Mishnah, there's really something that's so much deeper and so much more powerful in the Mesorah of Maisa than we would have realized and would have thought about up until now. Over there, the Mishnah is talking about what to do. There was a question of Maiser during the seventh year in the Eretz of Amin and Mayav. Those lands don't practice Shemitah, but there's still the Hanhag of Maiser and Trumas and Maiseris in those lands of Amin and Mayav, bordering Eretz Yisrael. But there's no really example, there's no solution to what should be done the seventh year. Eretz Yisrael doesn't have a question of Trumas and Maisris, it's Shemitah. But Eretz Amin and Mayav, which are going to practice Trumas and Maisris but don't have Shemitah, what should they do the seventh year? So the Gemara has a Lashon Amar B'Lazar. It says over there in that Mishnah, Mekubal ani Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, Sheshomer mirabbi, v'rabbi mirabbi, ad halacha l'moshe misinai, she'amin u'mayav ma'asrin maiser oni b'shvias. That Amin and Mayav take off Maiser Oni during the seventh year. So the Rav said, it's using a halacha l'moshe misinai. Over here we're talking about at most a drabanan, because Trumas and Maisers aren't noig in the lands of Amin and Mayav Midaraisa. Halacha l'moshe misinai is always used as a doraisa in most of the Gemaras that we come across. So how can the Mishnah over here say that they were Makabalists from the Rebbe, all the way back, Ad Halachal Moshe Sinai, even if you want to say that from Sinai we learned all the Daraisis, all the Rabbanas, all the Gezeiros, but that Lashon of Halachal Moshe Sinai, almost saying that it's like a Daraisa, seems to be inappropriate. The Rav explains, therefore, that what that Mishnah is teaching us is that there is another sug, another category of Mesoira Maisis, of this Mesoira of Hanhaga, that fits into this Halacha L'Maishim Yisina, the Divrei Kabbalah, but it's different in nature. It's not that the practice is being made, is telling us what was the previous generation, and then the previous generation, all the way back to Har Sinai, what was meant. There's a new Hanhaga called the Hanhaga of Roiv Yisrael doing something. Just like there's a psak from Besdin when Roiv of the Dayanim, you know, thinks a certain way or pastures a certain way that we follow the Roiv. If Klal Yisrael does something collectively, that becomes part of the Mesoira Maisis. Not because it's being made that's exactly what the Torah meant when it said X, Y, or Z. In that case, over there, there's no psukim about, there's no brises or mishnayis about what to actually do in Eretz Amen and Moyev. What was being said by Rabbi Lozer was Mekubal and Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, Shisham Rabbi, that's the Hanhaga, that's what was done in Eretz Amen and Moyev. And by the fact that that's what was done, that becomes part of the Mesoira Maisis. The doing in and of itself has power, has significance, has such strength that it becomes part of the Mesoira simply because that's what's done by Roiv Yisrael. The Rav, based on this Yisoid, wants to explain that's why, you know, even though we have a concept usually of Yiftach Bedar Kishmo Bedar, so later Bezdin should be able to argue later, you know, Tamid HaChachamim, Batedinim should be able to argue on previous ones. But we know that Tanoim don't argue on Amiran. Rishonim don't argue on the Amiran. Achronim don't argue on Rishonim, usually directly. Why not? So the Rav explains, based on the Messiah of Limud, they should be allowed to. However, it's this second Messiah, the Messiah Mises, this Messiah of Hanhaga. And that's what restricts Amiran from arguing on Tanoim. Because once the Mishnah was sealed, so if there's a Stam Mishnah, what that means is that was the Hanhag of Klal Yisrael regarding that issue, regarding that question or that mitzvah or that halacha, and therefore a later generation can't, one of the Amiram cannot argue on that, because like we said, anything that Roiv Klal Yisrael followed, if that's how they were Noyig, then that becomes part of the Mesoira Maisis, and the Mesoira Maisis is not a Mesoira where you argue on. It's not based on Svaris, on rational thinking, on bringing Rias. At most, one of the Amiram, what they can do is they can say, oh, I hold like one of those Tanoim. That's my opinion. And the same thing, once the Gemara was sealed, if there's a Gemara and there wasn't a Bar Plucht on it, a Rishon can't come and argue on a Gemara. One of the Gaonim can argue on the Gemara because if it wasn't argued on by one or the other Amiram in the days of the Gemara and the Gemara was sealed, that meant that was the Hanhag of Klal Yisrael in that specific controversy or in that specific discussion, and therefore as part of the Mesoira Maisis, a later generation cannot come and be chaylik on it and argue on it. This Yisoid of the Mesoira Maisis, of the power of Roiv Yisrael of doing something, has many makaras from different Gemaras, early sources, and I want to just, for example, give one of those sources. One of them is the Gemara in Pesachim Daf Samach Vav. Over there, the Gemara is having a discussion where Amrulai, they said to Hillel, Rabbi Shachach V'lai Hevi Sachin Me'er of Shabbos Ma'u. Right, and if Erev Pesach fell out on Shabbos, and they didn't bring the knife on Friday, so Erev Pesach fell out on Shabbos, what should they do? Are they allowed to bring or not bring the sakin to Shech the Karban Pesach? is the Malacha Vaitzah. Amar lahen halacha zu shamati v'shachachti. Ella, Hillel says, Hanach lahen liYisrael, let's leave it up to Yisrael, im ein neviim heim b'nei neviim heim. Because if they're not neviim, they're the children of neviim. Meaning, let's see what they do. And the Macher, Shabbos came, and mi shepischei tle, teichvei b'tzamrei, mi shepischei gedi, teichvei ben karnav. Those that brought a sheep, they ended up putting the knife into the wool, and the animal brought it. Those that brought a goat, they put it between the horns, and the animal brought it. And ra'a ma'aseh v'nizkar halacha. And they saw this ma'aseh, Hillel saw this ma'aseh. V'amar kach mekablani mipi shmaya v'avtayin. This is taka what I heard. So we see over here that Hillel says, hanach lehen Yisrael, im ein nevim heim b'nei nevim heim, that from their ma'aseh, from the actions themselves of Klal Yisrael, the truth will emerge just by watching, by seeing the Hanhag of Klal Yisrael. It will be a Haggadah's Edus. It will declare the truth itself. Klal Yisrael, we can trust how they act based on their own, you know, their own default. Unless we see something, you know, directly against Halacha. But when there's a controversy, or we don't know if Klal Yisrael is being noyig a certain way, hanach lehen Yisrael, im ein neviim heim b'nei neviim heim, that there's a subtle voice of prophecy that will emerge from their actions themselves. More recently, there are examples in halacha as well. Amongst the many contemporary poskim, the Aruch HaShulchan stands out in how much significance he gives to this Mesorah Maisis. And in the Halachas of Erevin, the Aruch HaShulchan over there is discussing whether in his cities in those days in Europe, if they could rely upon the fact that the streets, that the cities did not have Rishus HaRabim Daraisa, and therefore they would therefore be able to put up Erevin to be able to carry outside. And the question revolved around whether having 600,000 people is necessary to make something which is Rabban Daraisa. If it was, then the cities over there did not have that. Therefore, they weren't Rishus Rabban Daraisa. They'd be allowed to have an Erev. And if you don't need 600,000 people to make Rishus Rabban Daraisa, then their cities, by not having 600,000, still could be considered a Rishus Rabban Daraisa, and you would not be allowed to make Erev. So the Aruch HaShulchan's Lashon is Aval Al Kolpanim. Mam moyel ha'arichas. Why does it help this whole arichas in the sugya? Achrei she'ha'erev nispashtu b'roiv or Yisrael. After we see already the anhag is that roiv or Yisrael are utilizing an erev. Harbe me'ashana mikoidim. Already hundreds of years. V'rak al smach heter zeh. They're only relying upon this heter that you need 600,000 people in order to make a Rishus Rabban Daraisa, and therefore you don't have 600,000, so it's not a Rishus Rabban Daraisa, and therefore they're relying upon that to therefore make their Erevin. Uki'ilu bas kol yatsa. And it's as though there's a divine voice that has come out, halacha kishitazu. And vimbanu la'akiv, if we're going to come to stop such a thing, nirakim is gone, shadav zen spashit b'chol Yisrael. It's like we're criticizing that such a thing spread across all of Klal Yisrael, that they relied upon the Shita. So the Aruch HaShulchan writes, Ki'ilu bas kol yatsa. It's as though there's a heavenly voice that has come out. Similar to Hanach Lam Yisrael, in Enevim Him, B'nei Nevim Him, by their actions in and of itself, we see that there's a prophetic whisper of how Klal Yisrael was Nayig. If they were following a certain Shita, then that becomes part of the Mesorah Maisis. And therefore, we don't have the right to be mizgoin on such a hanhaga, on such a an action, on such a decision in terms of what Klal Yisrael chose to follow. So what we see is that in addition, when the Torah is given to the necessity of being royin es hanishma, to analyze the words that were spoken. Sometimes inside is better through Isis Machimais, that there's another category. The other category is to be Shaymin as Hanira, to listen very closely to that which we see. to that with to the things that we see and watch, and how Klal Yisrael is Nayig, and from there to understand what the Psukim, what the Mishnah is, and even what the Halacha is, merely by the fact of what the Hanhaga of Klal Yisrael is testifying in terms of the Haggadah's Edus, in terms of what that Baskal, what that heavenly voice is saying in terms of what the truth is. In terms of understanding this, it seems a little bit counterintuitive that the truth emerges from the world of Nesira Mises. It seems less impressive, I don't know, less intellectually and rationally accurate, as if we would leave it up to the Messiah of Limud. Why would the truth emerge from actions over Seichel? So to understand this on a deeper level, I want to share with you a Gemara in Brachas Daf Gimel. The Gemara over there is an Agadah Gemara, and it's talking about Sholish Mishmaris Havi Alayla. Belezer says that there are three watchings that the night can be divided in. And the Gemara says, Mishmar Rishayna, that the very first Mishmar, how do we know when it begins? So the Gemara describes and says, Chamar Nayar, that's the time that the donkey begins to awaken. Shniya, the second watching begins, Klavim Tzayakim, when the dogs begin to bark. Shlishis, the third one is Tinik Yainik Mishdehimai, it's when the baby begins to nurse from its mother, Ve'isha Misaperis and Baila, and a wife begins to whisper to her husband. These are the three Mishmaris of the night. The Chamar Noyer, the Klavim Tzayakim, the Tinik Yainik Mishadehim, Ve'isha Misaperis and Baila. Reb Tzadik in Sitkas HaTzadik explains that this Gemara is not just telling us the time that each of these Mishmaris is beginning in the night, but the Gemara is relating to something much, much deeper. That this is the Seder, this is the order of how individuals and how Klal Yisrael is going to emerge from Laila, from darkness, from confusion. That these are the three stages, these are the three steps of how the night, of how the darkness slowly gives way to daytime, to light. And the very, very beginning of this process is Chamar Noyer. Tzadik writes, Chamar Noyer is really referring to the Chumrius, the physicality waking up, beginning to arise from its slumber as the beginning process of the emergence from darkness. Rav Tzadik similarly explains elsewhere where the Mishnah in the beginning of Megillah says Megillah Nikras Beit Aleph Beis, and the Gemara, the Mishnah explains that how can the Megillah be read on Yer Aleph? By the Kfarim, by the people of the villages. Rav Tzadik writes that the people of the villages, the Kfarim people, they're symbolic to the simpler village Jew, not the city Jew, not the Jew who has access to the Sfarim and the Bismedrish and the Bezdin, but the simple farmer from far out, that at times he can feel and he can hear the light and he can sense the light of an Iris of Purim before the big tzaddikim can. To understand this a little bit more, in the very beginning of Iris HaTshuva, Rav Kook explains that there are Gimel Ma'arachis of Tshuva, that there are three stages of tshuva, of how a person begins to awaken from that world of slumber that he has fallen into. And Rav Kook writes that the very, very beginning is called tshuvas haguf. It's called the return first and foremost of the body. Rav Kook explains that very often, the very first stage of a person beginning to change doesn't start with the seichel, with the soul, with the neshama. It starts with a person himself just feeling sick or disgusted on a very physical level by how he doesn't feel good, by how he's not eating well, by how he's not living how he's supposed to, how he's low with energy. And then from there, he begins to just decide that he has to take better care of himself, and at all levels. And so it starts with maybe exercising or eating better. And from there, there's a whole revolution slowly that takes place inside of a person. But it begins with Tshuvas HaGuf. Rav Kook famously explains this bechlal in the process of tshuva, not just on the individual level, but also on the world stage, where Chazal say, Oni v'roichev al chamar, that Mashiach is going to come, but he's going to be an impoverished person riding on a chamar. What does that mean, riding on a chamar? That the stages of tshuva are going to begin riding on that chamar, on the chumrius. That's going to be sometimes the first stages. The physical building up, according to Rav Kook of Eretz Yisrael, is going to precede the Torah that's going to learn, and the great tzaddikim that perhaps are going to then return to the land. They're going to be people in the beginning of that process that are going to be more chumrius, more focused on the world of materialism. But it's going to be ani roichev ala chamar, that the harbinger, the one who is going to preface and going to begin that and herald in that process is going to be chamar nar, like the Gemara says. Therefore we see, sometimes the big intellectuals, the big balei seichel, overlook simple truths, and sometimes more chamriyistic of people. Just this past week, we all heard the good news in Yerushalayim. Not that we needed it, but it's still a very, very amazing sign of the times that not just Klal Yisrael knows the truth, but that the world is beginning to hear the truth, that Yerushalayim is the epicenter and the capital of Eretz Yisrael and of the world. And it took a simple materialistic, rather than some great intellectual person, to be able to acknowledge that simple truth. Chamar Nair, before the Klav Matzoikim, and before there's the Tinik Yainik and the Ishim Misaperes, it's only Reichav Ala Chamar. It sometimes begins with the more base and physical, before it then emerges into the later impressive stages of the logic and intellect. And the Bria works this way, that the truth emerges from shaymin es hanira, to be able to listen to that which is seen, to be able to watch the chomrius, to be able to see one's guf, to be able to see physically that a person is being pulled in a certain way, or the truth is emerging from the chomrius, to be shaymin es hanira. And the reason this is because chumrius follows teva. There's something natural and there's something organic about how the body works. And therefore, what Chazal are teaching us is that a person has to be a very, very sensitive and prudent observer to the world of chumrius, because it has something to say. It has something very, very wholesome and organic that it's going to scream out to each and every one of us who are willing to hear a certain truth. And that truth comes from a very raw, primal, unconscious place, but it's going to scream the truth in a way that sometimes our seichel, which rationalizes and is able to justify and deny and overlook and have agendas, that the chumrius will be able to articulate in a way that's much clearer and much more honest than any seichel can ever do. And therefore, first and foremost in Yiddishkeit, it's so important to be shaymin es hanira, to appreciate that there's a truth that is passed down and that emerges not just from the Messiah of Limud, but Yiddishkeit has a Messiah of Hanhaga, that there's a truth of how Klal Yisrael does something from one generation to the next, that articulates and that communicates a truth that's powerful and sometimes even more significant than the Messiah of Limud. People want to know, you know, some people, where's the Makar for that? And the Makar is that Klal Yisrael is doing it that way. And there's a Makar for that, that when Klal Yisrael does something a certain way, then there's truth to it. And not everything can be written, not everything can be spoken, but to be shoyimin as hanira, as an integral part of the truth. And even each family has a certain flavor, you know, of how a Shabbos is celebrated, how a yantar. You can't write down, you know, you can write down Hilcha Shabbos, you can write down Lamites Malachas, but to be able to write down a flavor of what a Shabbos is, of what a yantif is, you have to sit by a father and by a grandfather to take in and to understand what Yiddishkeit is supposed to look like. You know, it can't be contained just in words. But there has to be the respect and the appreciation for the Messiah and Mises. The whole world of Ben Adam L'Chaveroi, the whole world of how we interact with other people, if we think about it, is also based on to be shoyimin es hanira, to be able to hear that which we are looking at. That which we see. Yosef HaTzadik is in jail, and one morning he looks and he sees that there's two prisoners over there that don't seem to look the way they did, you know, previously. Not that they say anything. If you would have asked them how they're doing, they would have said, oh, Baruch Hashem, it's fine, it's good. However, Yosef HaTzadik looks and he's shoyimin es hanira. He hears that which he sees. And he says, Madua Penechim Ran Hayayim. Why are your faces so down today? There's more often a truth in what we can see from other people than what they actually tell us, than what they say. And if we're able to listen closely to what we're seeing, then, you know, we'll hear a lot more than what people actually tell us. Because if someone has to ask us for help, more often than not, it's already way too late. It's well beyond the time that we needed to already, you know, be there and help them. Once there's a story that illustrates this very, very powerfully. Once the Minchas Elazar was on a train, and he was sitting across from another person, and the other person took out a sandwich, began to unwrap it, and began eating it. And Minchas Elazar looks up at the person and says, you're a Yid, you're a Jew, why are you eating a non-kosher sandwich? The fellow says, I'm eating this, I'm not Jewish, I'm not sure what you're referring to, I'm eating a sandwich because I don't keep kosher, I don't have to keep kosher. And Minchas Elazar asked him again, he said, why are you eating that if you're Jewish? And the fellow said, I told you I'm not Jewish. And the Minchas Elazar just kept on saying again, why are you eating that if you're a Yid? Until the person couldn't take it anymore, he said, you're right, I am Jewish and I shouldn't be eating this. Now, those that were traveling with Minchas Elazar were puzzled, how in the world did you, you know, there's nothing about the person that looked Jewish. How did you know so certainly after the person was denying it over and over and over again that the person was a Jew? And then Minchas Elazar said very simply, he said, I saw when he took out the sandwich and when he unwrapped it, he didn't just bite into the sandwich. He first broke off a small little piece and he ate that small little piece, and then slowly but surely he broke off another piece. He said, a guy doesn't eat a sandwich that way. He bites straight into it. He'd break off a piece and we'll eat it that way. And even though he was telling me that he wasn't Jewish, but I was shoyimin es hanira. I listened very closely to what I saw. And that's a more powerful Haggadah's Eidus. That's a more powerful statement to me than anything that the person says. So if we have to know to be shoyimin es hanira, to be able to look around and to listen, not just to wait till people tell us something, but to be able to hear what people are saying by what we see, to be shoymin es hanira, madula pnechem ra'im hayoyim. In our own lives as well, this is a very, very important insight, to be able to acknowledge the honesty and the truth that emerges from our actions over sometimes what our seichel wants to say. You know, there was a joke. There were three guys who used to go all the time to the bar. And they would each get a drink, and they would spend time, and they would schmooze. And it was Boris, and Ivan, and Igor. And the three of them would, every week, Thursday, they would be there together. And the bartender knew, give them each a drink. And that's how it would go week after week. One week, two of them come in. It's only Boris, and it's only Ivan. And they say, you know, Igor, he unfortunately isn't here with us anymore, passed away. So if you can give me a drink, if you can give Ivan a drink, and Boris said, give me one more extra one for myself. This is for the memory of Igor. And Boris and Ivan, they make a l'chaim, they drink. And Boris takes the extra glass and says, and this is for the memory of Igor. And the two of them would come each week, week after week. And each week, Boris would take one for himself and one for the memory of Igor. And him and Ivan would share the drinks. And this would go on week after week. Until one week, Boris comes in alone. And he says, you know, I have unfortunate news to say that Ivan got sick and he's not... no longer with us anymore. He passed away. So the bartender gives Boris a drink. He gives him the extra one for the memory of Igor. And Boris says, I would want one also for the memory of Ivan. And every week, you know, from that point on, Boris would come in and he would always get his own glass and then one for the memory of Ivan, one for the memory of Igor. And this would go on for months and months and months. Till one week, he comes in, and the bartender gives him a glass, and he says, this is for the memory of Ivan. He gives him another glass, this is for the memory of Igor. And he's about to give him a third cup, you know. And Boris says, I don't know, that's it, that's enough. He says, what do you mean? He says, I stopped drinking this past week. For Ivan and Igor, I was able to have a glass. When we look closely at the world of Maisa, we can't fool ourselves. We can tell ourselves, I stopped drinking. But when you look at the world of Maisa, when we're shoymin es hanira, there's no playing around. We can say that we're keeping to this diet or that exercise, but the body doesn't lie. And the scale doesn't lie. And there's a certain painful sometimes and honest truth that comes out only for being shoymin es hanira. To looking. You know, we could think that you know, we don't have this bad mida, we don't have that bad mida, but lamaisa we keep on coming late to something. Lamaisa we keep on being lazy or pushing off or procrastinating things. If we just listen to our seichel, we could fool ourselves. But if we're shoymin es hanira, there's a certain honesty. Even to a more extreme example, you know, there are people that don't even remember difficult things or traumatic things that they went through when they were much younger. The body is able, in order to move on, is able to repress or push away and block out certain memories that happened. And the only way that they emerge much later in life is because the body doesn't forget. And there are certain situations that the body overreacts when it's experiencing something. And the mind blocked out already that incident from a long time ago. But the body holds on to it, and the body remembers. The body gives a Haggadah's Eidus, which is sometimes more truthful and more powerful than the Seichel wants to acknowledge and is ready to acknowledge. And therefore in Yiddishkeit, not just with keeping halachas, and not just with understanding psukim, that there's this thing called shoymin es hanira, but between us and other people and between us and ourselves, to appreciate and to understand that there's such a truth that comes out from being shoymin es hanira, from listening to the world of actions, to the world of that which is shown to us. by Klal Yisrael, by other people, and by ourselves. I just want to end with a very interesting story. A while back, I read a book that was written by a reporter. The book is titled Born to Run. This reporter loved to follow the stories of extreme athletes who were able to run not just a marathon, but these ultra marathons, which go 100, 150, 200 miles in one shot. And these are, you know, races that take hours and hours and hours, sometimes days. And he would love to, you know, follow these athletes and write up on who was, you know, winning these races and who was the best at these ultra marathons. He wrote that once a person approached him and said, you know, if you're following this, you must come with me to a place in Mexico where there is this tribe of indigenous Mexican inhabitants called the Tarahumara. There's a certain tribe over there, and they are the extreme ultra runners. They don't do it competitively, but they have this mesaira in their tradition and their culture, where they run and they run long distances, and they're supposedly these ultra marathon runners beyond anything else. You have to come see them. And he writes in this book how he traveled through the mountains, doesn't he? Witnessed it, he never saw anything like it. How these people would run, men, women, children, just for part of their culture, part of their almost their religious, you know, ceremonies, would have these day long or week long marathons that they would run. They'd barely be wearing anything. They would have like skins tied to their feet, and they were just off. And the speeds and the length at which they would run were unbelievable. And this reporter said he had this unbelievable idea where he had to somehow set up the greatest race that was ever run. He wanted to get the top runners from the West, meaning from America, who had trained and researched and were coached, you know, to the utmost, and create this race between this tribe, between the Tarahumara and these ultra runners. And this would be the epic battle, the epic race that would really answer the following question. It would answer the question of what is a stronger power? Is the strength of tradition, one generation to the next, more powerful than the top research and training and coaching that the runners of the West would have? And the story is unbelievable, how he got the ultra marathon runners from America to agree to this fun, to this race. And he describes in this book how the journey going down there was, and finally he arranges this whole race. And to make a long story short, it's neck to neck, this entire race, until the very, very end, the Tarahumara runners just take off. And right before the finish line, they just whiz right by these ultra marathon runners and cross the finish line first. And when they were asked how they learned to run, when they were children, they were just brought along with their parents and watched, you know, and almost picked it up to be from Shimonis and Nira, just to watch what they saw. And that's how they were trained in. And they explained that they weren't even used to beating people in races. They always just ran side by side. That's what they did the whole race, until they were told, I mean, they were told before that they had to cross the finish line first. At the end, they just ran ahead. But what we see is that there's such a power in the world of Shimonis and Nira, that there's a truth that emerges, not from the world necessarily of the Messiah of Lim, but the world of the intellect, the world of the rational thinking, logical conclusions. But there's a truth, Hanach Lehem Leisrael, Emlei Neviim Heim, B'nei Neviim Heim, that on our march towards Mashiach, we want to make it to the finish line, for us to understand that there's a truth to be Shimonis HaNira that emerges when we listen to that which we see. And that applies in Yiddishkeit, it applies between us and other people, and it applies between us and ourselves. And if we're able to do this, that in addition to the Messiah of Limud, that we should be able to also pass down and receive the Messiah of Maisa, the Messiah of Hanhaga. And then we should be Zaycha to the final day, when we're able to hear for a second time clearly the Rabbi Nishlan's voice again, and he's going to call us all back and bring us back in Mitzvah Shem together to the final finish line with the Gula Hashlem of Amitis Mehevi Amenu Amen. Should be soon.